it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Greetings from Fort Myers, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown, MassLive's Red Sox podcast. I'm Chris Cotillo, your host. We are here in camp for the second straight day, the official start of spring training today, with Heim Bloom and Alex Cora talking to the media. Pitchers and catchers are coming to camp. A few position players are trickling in. So for the first time in a few years, a regular, normal spring training camp for the Red Sox. Lots of storylines, not lots of new players, and we're going to kind of preview it all here with Chris Smith, my partner at MassLive. This is the first Fenway Rundown from a, well, it's actually the second Fenway Rundown from an Airbnb in Fort Myers, because we just recorded half of this and the recorder was not running, which is completely user error. That's on me, not on Chris Smith at all. But Chris Smith's going to, you know, give you the takes he just did for the second time, you know, hopefully with a little more, enthusiasm, flavor, the whole deal. That addition's always going to be in the vault, so we'll try it again here. But we are here, the MassLive team in Fort Myers for Red Sox spring training. Arrived here Sunday right before the Super Bowl. Been at the facility for the last 2 days. Today, Tuesday, was the first day of formal availabilities. Heim Bloom talked to the media. Alex Cora addressed the media. Some things to get to there. We'll talk about some rapid-fire topics from today and kind of set the scene as spring training begins. But we'll start with a question I asked you 10 minutes ago that you're now going to actually answer on the record, Chris. Your big takeaway from kind of the first couple days of camp here in Fort Myers.
Yeah, I think it's the roster turnover, definitely. I mean, there's faces that I have not seen. I have asked media relations people, who is that? Is that this player? Different things like that. It's funny when you come to camp or when I've covered several spring trainings now since 2016, and you always recognize about 99% of the players. Well, that's not the case this year. There's a lot of new guys, and there's 16 guys that are new on the 40-man roster overall. 10 of them are guys they got in trades and in free agency, and 6 of them are prospects that they added, to protect them from the Rule 5 draft or from getting to minor league free agency. So, it's definitely, a different feel. Guys that new leadership in a way. We'll see how that turns out because your leaders are gone, or your leader is gone in Xander Bogaerts. And some of the guys that, were important in that clubhouse last year, like Rich Hill and Nathan Eovaldi. And so, there's going to be new guys that have to step up. And, I think that and just, Alex and Alex Cora and Heim Bloom today answering some questions about, like, the projected standings and how the Red Sox are projected to finish last. And they acknowledged that. They said they didn't perform well last year. And, stacking up the teams in the AL East, this does feel like a last-place team. And, one thing that Johnny Miller asked, Heim today was, if his job was in jeopardy this year, if he didn't perform well, and if the team didn't perform well. And, two of 3 years, he's been in last place. The other year, they went to the ALCS. So if the projected standings are is what they, end up being here, they end up being a last place team. That's 3 or 4 years. And so there's a lot of pressure, I think, on Heim Bloom this year, even though he probably will not admit it.
Yeah, and that was kind of the first question today. There was a lot of things. We'll try to get to all of them, but I do think the turnover is a huge story here. Not just the quantity. Red Sox official yesterday said 32 of the 62 players in camp have never been on the Major League camp with the Red Sox before. For those of you doing the quick math at home, that's over half. There are 20 guys out of those 62 that are new to the Red Sox organization since the end of the season. You know some of the notable ones, whether it be Yoshida or Duvall or Justin Turner, Kluber, Kenley Jansen, all those guys. There's also, you know, a bunch of non-roster invitees, Jorge Alfaro, Raimel Tapia, some of those guys. So, you know, a lot of new blood there. And then, you know, if you just look at it, there's a lot of guys who, even if they were there before, you know, the offseason, they're relative newcomers, whether it be Tristan Casas or Reese McGuire. Connor Wong doesn't have too much time in the majors. You go around the diamond and there's not a lot of, you know, really long-tenured Red Sox, which kind of creates that leadership void that, you know, we've been talking about the last couple of days. So I think we'll start there, you know, really in terms of, you know, the void that you mentioned, Xander Bogaerts, Rich Hill, Nate Eovaldi, all those types of guys gone. Kike Hernandez with some pretty interesting comments last week or the week before on Chris Rose's podcast, talking about how he thought it should be a priority for the Red Sox to change up their clubhouse mix heading into this season. And I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but, you know, the clubhouse culture should be something that they focus on. To me, that quote read like there was something wrong in 2022. He kind of doubled down on that yesterday by saying it was a team that was too comfortable being in last place, maybe too complacent being in last place. That's a notion that Alex Cora disagreed with today. Chaim Bloom said he definitely wasn't in that boat and didn't think most guys were in September. But kind of interesting that Kike's come out and said this kind of at a time when he's, you know, assuming not necessarily the face of the franchise role, because I think that is Rafael Devers' job at the end of the day. He's the best player, the highest paid player, but Kike is becoming a real, you know, vocal leader and piece in there. What do you make of kind of the comments and this storyline that's emerged in the last week or so?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, really interesting. And when, you know, I first heard the comments when I was listening to the Chris Rose thing, the first thing I thought of was a tweet that one of the Red Sox reporters, actually I'm looking up now to see who it was, but one of the Red Sox reporters last year after the last game of the season, you know, I think it was Sean McAdam, you know, mentioned how, you know, the players were sitting there in the clubhouse after their final game, drinking beer, kind of reminiscing, you know, talking to each other. It's not like they were in any urgency to leave. And so I think that, you know, they were a last place team last year. They weren't good, but I don't think the chemistry or anything like that was an issue. If anything, they liked each other, you know, too much. You know, we saw with the Kevin Plawecki stuff, you know, when he got designated for assignment, the team went crazy.
And I'll add the Christian Vasquez stuff in Houston when he got dealt.
Yeah, and, you know, the team was, you know, blaring Kevin Plawecki's song, you know, on the his walk-up song and the song that he had used that, you know, with the team in the postseason in 2021 after every win that they got, you know, after he was DFA'd in 2000, the final month of last season. So, you know, so I don't think there was, but, you know, Kike talked about complacency, like in being in last place, and they got okay with that. You know, that's different, obviously, from, you know, tension in the clubhouse and not getting along, which, as I said, I don't think that was the case. Were they complacent in the clubhouse? Well, Alex Cora, you know, said they weren't complacent. I can, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Rafael Devers is going to be asked that question when he, you know, and I'm sure he probably was not complacent, you know, with that. So, I think that Alex Cora actually mentioned Devers today is that. So, you know, it should be interesting to see how some of the other guys that were there from last year comment on that. You know, it's tough to get a read, though, like, of, like, really what he kind of meant by that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the whole, you know, clubhouse trouble, retroactive look, we should have been doing this or this or this, it, to me, and I don't think he meant it this way, because I don't think that anybody would, you know, go out of your way to blast, you know, former teammates and then, you know, kind of put on blast the culture that a manager that you're super close with has developed and curated in the clubhouse. But that reads as like, you know, the clubhouse mix, we needed to shake things up. You know, hard to look at that and not think it's something of a shot at Xander Bogaerts, JD Martinez, Nate Eovaldi, Rich Hill, the guys who were there, you know, in the case of, you know, Xander and Eovaldi and Martinez there for a while. Like, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, do this media narrative of, oh, there was tension, and, you know, they're creating tension now. But just to me, like, it's kind of a weird thing to say. If it's true and he thinks it's true, then appreciate the candor there. I kind of interpret it more as, you know, he is happy that Justin Turner's there because it's his friend, you know, and he's happy that he gets to kind of mold the clubhouse in his image instead of guys that were there, you know, 5 years before. Like, I don't know if I'm misreading that or not, but it just, it's hard to look at it and say, oh, that you can, you know, look at that and, you know, the guys who were on the team last year and have departed. I can't imagine they're thrilled about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's probably, they're probably scratching their heads, some of them, and I have no idea if they've even seen the comments, but, you know, like a Rich Hill or, you know, a Xander Bogaerts or Nathan Eovaldi, who is, you know, a leader on this team for several years. It is interesting, though, like, you know, he has talked about how he wants Justin Turner, Kike Hernandez has talked about how he wants Justin Turner to come into the clubhouse and be himself and be a leader, even though this is his first year with the team. And, you know, sometimes that might be awkward for a player to become a leader in their first year with a team. But, you know, that's kind of what he did in with the Dodgers. And that's something that, you know, Alex Gore mentioned today. He feels like, you know, he was asked about the void with J.D. Martinez. You know, J.D. was the type of guy that would, you know, talk hitting with everybody, try to help out their swings and stuff. And you know, look at anything and try to help teammates. And, you know, obviously he was a very vocal guy in that clubhouse and had fun and stuff like that. And so, you know, Alex was asked about the void, and he said, you know, JD's gone, but JT, Justin Turner, you know, it feels like him coming in now is like when JD came in 2018. And so, obviously, you know, rosters go through turnover. I mean, we saw the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl, and, you know, that's a totally different roster than they had at the Super Bowl, you know, when they played the Patriots. We saw the roster turnover from 2012 to 2013, where a lot of the new guys, you know, came in, like, you know, Johnny Gomes and, you know, Mike Napoli and Ryan Dempster and, you know, Shane Victorino, and they changed the clubhouse. They were leaders in their first years. So, you know, I'm not saying that a change in leadership was needed, but it's not always a bad thing because, you know, I mean, you know, things have to change at times. And so we are, you know, seeing a different mix, and we're going to definitely see new leaders. And one of those guys, they'll probably be a leader if he you know, pitchers usually don't emerge as leaders. Like starting pitchers, they pitch every fifth day and they hang out with the pitchers and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, we saw Chris Sale with his dugout, you know, motivational speech in game, I think it was 5 of the World Series in 2018. He's a guy that's, you know, vocal, and he's somebody that has often, you know, been part of team meetings and stuff like that. And so if he can stay healthy and stay with the team and not be in Fort Myers rehabbing, which everything's smooth sailing right now, I mean, he's set to throw to the hitters next week, then he can be a leader of the team. So there's different guys that can take over, you know, as, you know, that leadership role. Turner, you know, Kike is obviously, you know, seems like he's becoming a leader, or that's what the Red Sox are making him out to be. You got other guys like Chris Sale, and then, you know, Rafael Devers. I mean, you just signed an 11-year, what was it, $280 million?
It was, well,
I'll try again. 340?
He's on paternity leave, so he doesn't know the 313.5, whatever.
Oh, yeah, 313.5. You know, he just signed that deal, and he could be the face of the franchise. I think that, you know, one thing that will help with Devers, you know, becoming the face of the franchise and becoming the leaders, you know, if he starts doing his, you know, interviews in English and some of the, you know, fans get to see his real personality. Obviously, they have seen his personality, and I don't blame him if he doesn't want to do, even though he speaks very good English, I don't blame him if he doesn't want to do, you know, interviews in English right now. If he doesn't feel comfortable, he doesn't feel comfortable, and, you know, he doesn't want any of his message misinterpreted. But I think that will help when he, you know, because I think he has the type of personality. I don't think anybody has the type of personality that David Ortiz had, but he has that type of personality that, you know, the fans will really love. I mean, we've seen the stuff with, you know, the scoops and the ice cream and different things like that. You're not the only ice cream man, Cotillo, and so.
No, I'm just the poor one of the two of us, clearly.
Yes, exactly. And so I think with him, once he starts speaking, doing his interviews in English and, you know, certain things like that, that can help become the leader. But, you know, I mean, it's not just dealing with the media, you know. Like, I'm sure he communicates well with all his teammates, and they probably look at him as a leader.
Yeah, and, you know, in terms of Devers, I think a lot of it is, for his whole career, he's had guys that have been with the team his whole career, right? Like, his second year in the big leagues was, you know, 18, and he had Bogarts that was already there. He never probably wanted to overstep him. Guys, you know, a lot of veterans on that team, whether it be, you know, as you mentioned, Sale or Martinez or Mookie or Jackie Bradley. I mean, there's so many guys, Mitch Moreland, that were so much older, so much more experienced than Devers at that stage. So clubhouse dynamic, definitely a topic of discussion that's hot right now, will continue to be throughout spring as this club kind of finds its identity for sure. We'll do some rapid fire on some other takeaways from today. We have about 30 minutes of Chaim Bloom and 25 minutes of Alex Cora. Looks like they're on the stand instead of they're on the bench at Fenway South. You're on the stand when you get asked hard questions by Johnny Miller. We saw that today with Chaim Bloom. If he's on the hot seat, which he said it's not really his worry, just wants the team to be better. With Alex Cora, it was about a book that is sitting right in front of us right here on our table, Winning Fixes Everything by Evan Drellick, former Mass Live Red Sox writer, friend of the program. Alex Cora today said he's not there to talk about a book. Obviously, anybody who's seen the excerpts, seen what came out of here, a few different things about Cora, including that he bragged to Red Sox players that they stole the World Series in Houston in 2017. You know, I think Alex kind of does the same thing. He answers every question about it with, "I'm sorry. I did not, you know, everybody knows how I feel. I screwed up. I paid the price. Now I'm back, and I'm here to focus on the Red Sox." I think it's a smart way to handle it. I don't think he's actually ever provided the specific explanation of what happened behind the scenes, but he has his job back. Generally, you know, all is forgiven by a large sect of baseball fans, and that was kind of the strategy he chose again today. A story that I expect just will, as it has time and time again, gone away and eventually resurface, as he said, maybe on a Netflix series someday, and then go away again. It's a stain that's going to be there for his entire career. He knows that, but not something that I think is really affecting camp materially right now.
Yeah, so I think with Alex, you know, the interesting thing is that
we took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
You know, he has been very open. He was asked about it at Yankee Stadium when Ime from the Celtics, is that how you pronounce the coach of the Celtics name? was suspended for a year. Somebody at the Yankee Stadium, I think a New York Knicks writer, came and asked him, you know, what advice he could give to, you know, to the Celtics coach. And so, you know, and he was very, you know, good. Like, you know, he spoke about how, you know, the situation and everything. I think, you know, one thing to think about with Cora, I'm not, the book didn't paint him in a very good light. You know, I mean, there were some stuff that we already knew about, some stuff that we learned about, and the whole, you know, fight that he had with the broadcaster and with AJ Hinch. You know, we knew about that, but there was, you know, it was worse than what it was made out to be the previous time. So, the first reporting by Drellick. So, but I also think, you know, you look at it this way, he was a player, and I'm not trying to defend him, but he was a player's whole career. That was his first job as a coach. You know, you can be, you know, he said it 6 years ago, you can be immature. You can learn from it. I mean, the first journalism job I had, I wasn't very mature. And so, you know, you learn from things.
And now?
I'm still not mature, but I think I am.
Yeah.
But seriously, though, like, I'm sure that he is not making the same mistakes. And, you know, I mean, he hasn't made the same mistakes about, you know, going after the media or whatever that he did in Houston. And so I think that, you know, you can change and you can learn from, you know, your bad moments of your life. And so, you know, not defending him, but you know, I think that's the way the Red Sox look at it too, is that they feel like he's the best manager for the team. We saw what he did in 2018, his in-game managing, his rapport with the players, his ability to connect with the Latin players and, you know, the English-speaking players so well as he did as a player. And, you know, I think that they look at it as like, you know, he learned from that and he was able to grow from it. And now he's a different person. I don't know that exactly because I'm not in the clubhouse every day and I'm not in the clubhouse after the media leaves. But I think the whole thing is interesting. Bloom was asked about it today and said, you know, he's our manager and stuff like that. And so the Red Sox have obviously defended him. And I think that Cora has been pretty open about the situation, you know, since he was suspended.
Yeah, again, not something I think that's going to affect them moving forward. A couple more things, takeaways from today. I think the biggest piece of news from Alex Cora was that in terms of lineup construction, question I asked, did not get, you know, the full lineup for everybody against righties, against lefties for opening day. But he did say he wants to separate Yoshida and Rafael Devers. So Yoshida, I think, is going to be the leadoff man on most days, especially against righties. Devers, you are a big proponent of keeping your best hitter in the two-hole. That is not going to be the case. It's not going to be Yoshida-Devers. So it looks like, you know, Yoshida and then maybe Kike Hernandez batting second, maybe Justin Turner batting second, which I think is honestly, if not the more likely thing, then the better idea, and then Devers third and figure it out from there. How do you see this lineup coming together? I know, you know, there's kind of some platoons here and there, second base maybe, catcher, but, you know, how would you align it knowing now that they definitely don't want that lefty-lefty 1-2 punch to start?
Well, as Cora mentioned to me last year, I asked him what he thought, like last year at the end of the year, I asked him what he thought about Aaron Judge leading off for the Yankees and, you know, being their best player and leading off. And he says that philosophies change over time and, you know, different views and that, you know, what there was this big trend about the best hitter being second in the lineup. Mike Trout was hitting second in the lineup, yada, yada, yada. And you know, Aaron Judge was sitting second in the lineup. All of a sudden, they put him first in the lineup. And so things do change. You know, I do like the idea of not having back-to-back lefties at the top of the lineup. So I would think that the best person to hit second, you know, would be Justin Turner just because of his, you know, ability to grind out at bats. He's a professional hitter. And, you know, I think that the Red Sox really we saw it with Schwarber, you know, the ability to take his walks and to make pitchers work. And I think if you have those two guys at the beginning of the lineup, like Yoshida is incredible. Like last year in Japan, he had 40 more walks than strikeouts. And over 7 seasons in Japan, he's had 120 more walks than strikeouts. And so, like, he's, obviously that's not going to translate to the majors exactly like that. But it does show the ability to grind out at bats. And I think in this offseason, when I was off on paternity leave and reading things here and there, somebody did compare it to, like, the Schwarber, mm-hmm. you know, who was that? Was that Bloom or? I don't remember. But anyway, somebody was like, you know, this is kind of like Schwarber coming in. And you know, there are complete unknowns about him as a player. Could his on-base percentage and ability to be that type of hitter fade off a little bit, you know, coming to the major leagues? Definitely. But, you know, I think that having those two guys at the top of the lineup would, you know, be extremely good, you know, because of the ability to work counts and everything. And then, you know, I could see Devers, you know, hitting third and whoever fourth. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Turner's a candidate if he's not second. I think Duvall's a candidate there.
They put Verdugo fourth in the lineup for the second half of last year for a lot of parts. So, you know, I mean, there could be numerous guys. I'm trying to think who else, though. Like, who else could be a good candidate for fourth?
Casas is probably a little lower, right?
Yeah, I think that with Casas, you know, like, they, you know, like, as I mentioned today, or I said to Bloom today, I was like, you know, I mean, yeah, what, you know, you guys must have been pretty confident when you traded, you know, in Casas, because you traded, you know, Hosmer. There's really
DFA'd
no
him.
DFA. Jesus. There's really no backup plan, you know, like at first base. I mean, Dahlback's still there, but, you know, you could put Turner there. But really, I mean, they're counting on Tristan. And so I think that they'll start him off lower in the lineup to start the year to get him comfortable. And once he gets comfortable, if he does get comfortable and he's producing, he could be the number two hitter in the lineup, although he is
lefty.
But, I mean, or anywhere at the top of that lineup. So I think that, you know, that's interesting. Duvall's interesting where he's a home run guy. I mean, there's been three seasons where he's hit over 30 home runs, you know, and I know he had some injury things last year and didn't play much, yada, yada, yada. But, there's definitely guys that could, like, be breakout candidates on this team that, you know, like, you don't see right now as the number four hitter on the team that could definitely emerge as that.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll end with this. You're talking a little about the first base mix and things like that. You know, you look at it, and Mondesi probably not ready for opening day. We know Trevor Story is going to be out for a while. Looks still to me like the Red Sox are one infielder short. You know, you're assuming Casas at first, Arroyo at second, Kike at short, Devers at third, Turner as a backup first base option. Feel like, you know, Turner they expect is going to, against some lefties, is going to play first. That makes Dahlbeck a little redundant on the roster. You know, I think that they would be better off with a more versatile guy than Dahlbeck. To me, Jose Iglesias is a guy that makes a ton of sense. And Heimblum today did not rule out the addition of a major league player. Seems like middle infield, you know, the best fit there. Is that the area, if you were going to add, you'd add to that?
Yeah, and I think it's important just because, you know, if you look at it, you know, even if Mondesi was ready for opening day, you know, Arroyo and Mondesi have had, you know, extremely big injury histories. You know, like the Arroyo was on the IL like three or four times in 2021. Mondesi, as you pointed out to me, has only played 358 games in seven seasons. And so, you know, and beyond what they have with those guys, obviously they have Kike at shortstop and Arroyo at second. And then beyond those three, with Mondesi included, they have nobody on the 40-man roster with actual major league experience. They have Valdez, who they got in the Christian Vasquez trade. They have David Hamilton, who they just added to the 40-man roster in the offseason as a prospect. He was from the Hunter Renfrow trade. Then they have, you know, Rafaela, who, you know, is, you know, could be an elite defensive shortstop in elite defensive center fielder. However, you know, there's still improvements he needs to make offensively. And so before he's ready, and he has not played in the majors, he has not played above double A. You look at it, and there's just nothing that you have depth-wise. I mean, Bobby Dahlbeck did play some shortstop in second base at times over the past couple of years, but it's not something you probably want to do on a regular basis. It's only an emergency thing. So, yeah, I think that's the area of need, that the biggest area of need, you know, for the Red Sox going into this camp and then heading towards opening day.
Yeah, the roster projection I did today, Dahlbeck makes the team. Again, redundant with Justin Turner on the roster. And then Nico Goodrum, the minor league signee, non-roster invitee, makes the team, assuming that Mondesi is out. So obviously plenty of coverage coming from us. We're sitting here early on Tuesday night after just one day, and I think we have 12 or 13 stories already up on the site, so be sure to check all those out. Be here for a few weeks here in camp chronicling the start of the Red Sox season. So as always, we appreciate you tuning in and reading.